Quick announcement before you get to today's episode of the Powwow Life Podcast. This is Paul Gatter, and I have a special announcement. Right now, we are in the middle of our Explore Native Challenge. This is the challenge we do each year that gets you to dig a little deeper into Native culture. Whether you're new to Native culture or you grew up on the reservation, it doesn't matter. This is your chance to find out a little bit more historical information, some modern information, follow some creators, some artists, all kinds of things that we're going to challenge you to do over the next 60 days. You can find out more over at powwows.com/win. And the cool thing is, this is a challenge with prizes. We're partnered with 8th Generation, and they're giving away 3 blankets, some jewelry, and lots of other prizes. Don't miss your chance, powwows.com/win. And at the end of today's episode, I'll even give you a bonus code that'll get you extra entries into it. All right, here we are back with today's episode. Good luck.
Welcome to Powwow Life Podcast from powwows.com, connecting you with Native culture since 1996. Here's your host, Paul Gowder.
After a series of shocking violent crimes shatters a remote Native village in northern Alaska, one man has embarked on a journey to investigate the terrifying paranormal connection. It's a haunting true crime documentary now streaming on Hulu called Blood and Myth, and it's ultimately a tale about identity, American dreams, and the danger of veering too far from home. Thanks for Hulu and Disney for arranging an interview with the creator of the original audio series on Audible and one of the producers. I'm so excited to bring you this interview so you can learn more about Blood and Myth. Well, thanks, guys. I appreciate you spending some time with me today. If you would, can we start with just you guys introducing yourselves?
Sure. I'm James Domick Jr.
Hey, I'm Khalil Hudson. I'm the director and one of the executive producers on Blood and Myth.
All right. Yeah. So I watched it today, and one quote that kind of stuck out to me is that this story, it was like, I think the quote was, "His story chose me." So I'd really like to hear, you know, from you guys, how did you come upon this story, and how did it speak to you?
I've been obsessed with this story since I first heard it. At the time, I was working here in Anchorage, Alaska. I was working and doing freelance film production. And I'm originally from up north where this story takes place, up northwest Alaska.
Right.
And so when this all went down, I was getting information from the newspapers and the TV news. I was also getting inside information from film crews who had worked with Teddy. And I was also getting inside information from the Native community back home. And also the mechanic community through the Buckle Brothers. I had inside information from all three different communities. And I was like, well, what do I do with all this? If I don't tell this story, I felt it was going to haunt me forever, because I had all these pieces to this insanely unbelievable story. Very unique story of survival and violence and, you know, culture. And so I thought I might as well take a chance at it. And so I did.
You used the word haunting. I think that's a good description of parts of the story. Now that you've done it as audiobook and now film, or, you know, a documentary film, does it still haunt you?
You know, I feel like I got it. I feel like I did it justice. I felt like it chose me. It showed its neck to me, and I had to get it. And I had to, you know, share it. So I don't feel that I'll live with that regret as an old man. It won't haunt me as an old man. I feel like I let it loose. You know, we brought on Khalil to direct the piece, and, you know, a fellow Alaskan, Alaska Native, and you know, it was really important to me to have an Alaska Native director on board as well.
Yeah, I've only been up there once and really just touched the tip of Alaska. I didn't really get up into the part, the northern part. But even my little bit experience up there, things are different up in Alaska. So, you know, telling a story like this with not just the backdrop of Alaska, but life is different up there. How did y'all approach trying to portray that in film and really show people what it's like being there?
Khalil, you want to?
Yeah. So, you know, I'll just kind of reiterate and agree with you. You know, I was born and raised in Alaska. Spent most of my formative years there, and have since spent a lot of time in Alaska. And it's different in many ways. And I think one of the ways that's obvious, but then that trickles down to impact a lot of different other ways of life is quite simply the environment, right? Which is obvious. It is not easy living up there. It's difficult to get around. Transportation is difficult. The communities are isolated. Getting food is difficult. You know, a lot of the amenities that most people are used to living down here in the lower 48, are just not available. And so what that does is, it creates, a much stronger sense of community. And where individuals are reliant on one another and to survive, quite frankly. But it also kind of, impacts even like, hey, if you need somebody to come over and move a couch, you know, you've got 10 people in your phone that you can come over and help you move a couch. So there's just this really sense of a strong sense of connection. And you see that in this film in different ways, right? And we didn't want to kind of hit people over the head with any of this stuff, but sort of the interconnectedness of people, even, you know, over great distances is, I think one of the defining characteristics of people's relationships is that it's very, so you can rely on other people to, you know, we just showed up to Big Bob's house, right? And he's immediately, you know, oh, how, you know, how can I help you? What do you need? You know, and even to the crew, right? We were a small crew. We wanted to keep it small. There's just this sense that, you know, of people wanting to help and people wanting to help you get the information that you need. The flip side of this is that, this was not an easy community. These communities were not, readily willing to just go on camera, right?
Right.
So there was, I think one of the biggest challenges was that James certainly experienced when he was making his Audible original, his audiobook, is that people just did not want to talk, right? So that was a lot of work, and we spent many, many months going back and forth in conversation with, Lorena, for example, who's Teddy's sister. She was very reluctant to talk to us, and it really took months of going back and having discussions, and she finally kind of agreed to open up. So there are certain things that, like, certain things that we had to overcome because of and that all kind of comes back to how tight the communities are, and within, you know, within that you have people who, you know, they also don't want to necessarily be the spokesperson for a whole group of people, whether it's a village or a tribe. So.
Yeah. And it's, I was curious as to what the community's response would be. I mean, you're touching on not just personal stories, but cultural stories. So, I can understand people being reluctant. How did you guys walk that balance between telling the cultural side, but while not really, I guess, isolating or making the community up there not want to talk? I imagine that was tough, right?
Yeah, it was. You know, we in Alaska, and it's cold and dark in the wintertime. There's no other way around it, right? And we watch a lot of movies. We watch a lot of TV. We read a lot of books. There's ways we pass the time indoors, and movies and being one of them. We realized that a lot of our stories up north were never told by us. They were always told by other people, guessing what we're like and what we think. And so I think in general, Inupiaq culture, Inuit culture in general is pretty shy. And people were willing to give you the coat off their back, willing to help you get your truck unstuck. But once you pull out a camera and you start wanting to talk about a fugitive on the run and the village being on lockdown, then I don't want to talk. I don't want to talk.
Right.
But I grew up in that community. I was born and raised up there. I still have a lot of family up there. And so because they knew me, they knew my family, I was able to get in, I think, farther than other people would be able to. I was able to convince them, like, this is going to be worth telling our stories. It's worth one of us telling our own stories and not having other people tell it for us. That was a big convincing line. And because anytime Inuit people and Inupiaq people see ourselves on TV, it's usually it's a caricature. It's over the top. We're in furs, we're in spears. Yeah, we have spears. You know, it's the stereotype. And so, you know, getting them to get on board, it took some coaxing, but once we did, it was very, very, very fruitful.
I jokingly say sometimes that, you know, anytime I see a Native story being told, film, TV, and it doesn't include a powwow scene, I think it's pretty cool, right? I mean, because that's the default that it's easy to go to. I'm curious, you first told this story with Audible. How did you approach that? That's such a different medium to tell a story. I mean, how was that your approach by them, or did you feel like the story needed to be told in that format?
Well, when I first had this idea of this, just when I had all these facts from all these different communities, I thought this would make a great movie. But I thought this is it. I knew because I worked in film production, I knew that in order to make a movie, it takes an army of people, like a literal army of people.
Right.
But I knew that if I made a podcast or an audiobook, that's two or three people. And so I thought if I want the movie, I have to do the audiobook first. It was a proof of concept. If I show them the proof of concept, they'll get what I'm seeing for a movie version. And, you know, it just kind of worked out. I was working at a Native radio station. There was a guy from New York City who was working in there for the summer. He makes podcasts. He makes audiobooks. And so he asked me one day if I knew any good stories. And I said, no, but I got one that would, he said, do you have any good stories that make a good podcast? I said, no, but I got one that would make a good movie. And I told him this whole story, you know, it was like 4:30 on a Friday, like water cooler, like looking at the clock, waiting for it to turn 5. And I told him the whole story. And he was like, that'd make a pretty good podcast or a pretty good audiobook. And I thought, okay, well, let's do it, you know? And so I wanted to tell this story in a true crime way, but unveil the facts like a movie would, kind of slowly, but also tap into the Native storytelling aspect, oral tradition and Native storytelling. Because humans have been listening to stories longer than we've been reading them or watching them. We've been listening to them longer. And so trying to get back to that and trying to you know, just use the theater of the mind. And, you know, that was the idea of making the audiobook person. It did surprisingly well. It was a New York Times bestseller for 6 weeks. Number one, you know, it was one of the biggest Audible originals of all time. So, you know, I was just very surprised that it did that well. So
what was it? What's the response been from, you know, this is, the film is still yet to kind of see the reactions, but what has been the reaction from the local community of seeing this or hearing the story? And I'm curious too, is like the general public in seeing these kind of cultural things be told, as well with the crew trauma, what's the reaction from the audience has been?
I'll answer the first part and I'll let Khalil answer the second part. The response from back home with the audiobook has been received very well. People where we're from, we're not used to hearing ourselves and seeing ourselves on the way we are on screen. It's usually a caricature or a stereotype. And so to hear native accents and to hear village English and, you know, in a story like this, we're starting to feel more represented in a way. And you know, the premiere date got released through Deadline, and that got shared a bunch up through the social media up north. People up north are very excited to, you know, see this, to see one of our own stories told by one of us. So, but as far as the reception to the rest of the world, I'll let Khalil talk about that.
Well, we don't know yet.
Right.
I mean, that's the easy answer. We will.
Thanks for being with us and listening all the way to the end. Our Explore Native Challenge is going strong, powwows.com/win. And as promised, for finishing the episode, I have a bonus code for you. Go to the powwows.com/win, look for the entry form, find the place for bonus codes, and put in 3525269. That's 3525269. That bonus code is only available for listening to our podcast. Good luck. I hope it's you that wins one of these 3 8th generation blankets, some of their jewelry, scarves, and so many more prizes. powwows.com/win. Good luck.